What does LPP stand for?
Representative Hill, that's Lodgepole Pine.
Lodgepole Pine.
I didn't understand about two-thirds of what you just said, so I'm going to ask for the chart, so.
You're saying officially, I guess, a legitimate question. We didn't know what LPP was. Could you briefly just go bring, I can officially up to speed on the chart where we are?
And then what's, excuse me, another question what relates to that is CFL Class 4 land, or what does that stand for?
Representative Anderson, perhaps I better do a little better job of explaining the titles. On the first chart, the front page, besides LPP, we have, from reading from the left, Douglas fir, ponderosa pine, hemlock, lodgepole pine, other softwood types, and that includes true fir, other types of pine, and so on. Hardwoods, non-stocked acreage, and then, of course, the total. On the second chart, the title is Area of Commercial Forest Land by Cubic Foot Site Class. Now, this is non-industrial private landowners, which includes farmers and all other private landowners, but does not include any industrial corporations. Now, it does include non-industrial corporations, corporations who do not own and operate a processing plant in the state of Oregon. They may own and operate a processing plant in some other state, so that there are some corporate entities involved here who are actually acting as an industrial owner might. This second chart breaks down the site classification, or breaks down the acreage by site classification by zone of the state. Northwest Oregon includes the counties north of Lane, Lincoln and Benton counties, and west of the Willamette River. Northwest Oregon includes those counties north of Marion, Polk, and Lincoln. Okay, West Central Oregon includes the counties south of that line and north of Douglas County. And Southwest Oregon includes all of the counties, Douglas County and south, in Western Oregon. In Eastern Oregon, the line runs between Lake and Harney counties, as I remember correctly. What we're trying to show by the second table is that the site class distribution of acreage owned by non-industrial private landowners is different in various parts of the state. Now, it is almost the same in Northwest Oregon as it is in West Central. So a person might want to say that everything north of the Lane-Douglas County line in Western Oregon is essentially the same, regardless of where you are in that area. The southwestern Oregon, the five counties in that area, are significantly different from the rest of Western Oregon as insofar as their productivity. In Eastern Oregon,
is there a significant difference in that southwest Oregon between the two coastal counties and the other three?
Representative Trahan, yes, there is. Unfortunately, the data is not broken out by county. If I may go ahead, the third table then is labeled table two. It's the area of non-industrial private commercial forest land by size class for southwest and for all of Western Oregon. Now, again, because of the limitations of the data, the only area in Western Oregon we could present with any kind of reliability data of this nature was for southwestern Oregon. And we, you also see that some of those figures had to be lumped because the probability of error is too great. For farmer-owned and managed land, which is what we believe you're wanting to focus in on, the breakdowns, the 82,000 acres covers all the land in ownerships of 500 acres or less. And the 385,000 is all those of 501 acres or larger. They all had to be combined into those two areas. And same thing for Western Oregon. You'll find some of the data had to be combined because of the probability for error was too great. Now, the difference in there, again, that we'd like to point out is that that there is, while there's not more acreage involved in land owned by individuals who are not farmers, the land ownership for farmer-owned and managed land is, the ownership classes are quite a bit larger, both in Southwest Oregon and in the rest of Western Oregon. There is a significant difference, I believe, between the two, so that we can draw an inference that farmer-owned lands tend to be larger in larger parcels than those owned by individuals who do not profess to be farmers. Now, again, we do not have any information to tell whether this land is located in an EFU zone or other agricultural zone, or whether it's in a primary forest zone.
Chairman? What did you want us to see from the third chart here?
One, table two, which is the third page.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Priestley, we intended to show two things. One, that the acreage owned by farmers, which we believe to be probably best descriptive of the land that's intended to be included in the bill, is of significantly larger parcel size than that owned by individuals, and that there is a difference in parcel size in general between that in Southwest Oregon and the rest of Western Oregon.
I don't see that. I see that 82 there, and the 82 is in the column headed 11 to 500.
18,000.
So
yeah, and
maybe you can explain it, because I don't. That's what I see. I see 82 under the column 11-500. What is that all about?
Okay, Representative Priestley, again, because of the unreliability of sampling data, we combined all the land that was owned by in the 0 to 10 with the 11 to 500 in farmers. There's very, very little in the 0 to 10 where the owner said he was a farmer. So that there, we can essentially say that there is none in that area, and that's the reason why the table is set up the way it is.
Those are acres? 11 to 500 acres? Or?
11 to 500 acres per owner. In other words, the when the sample was taken on the ground, they went to the owner and, you know, how many acres do you own? What is your occupation? And for those who said they were farmers, there were virtually none of them that owned less than 11 acres.
And what's the significance of that in this bill?
Because of the parcelization requirements, where it says that the contiguous parcels of less than 20 acres in size, and the intent was to show that at least as far as forest owners or forest land is concerned, there's what we consider to be a very, very small acreage involved in that.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chair?
What led you to the conclusion that with this bill we were talking about forest land that is owned by farmers only rather than general forest land across the state?
Representative Trahan, that was because the bill addressed itself to agricultural lands, and we have drawn the conclusion in past times that agricultural lands are zoned agricultural are in general owned by farmers.
Mr. Chairman, still a little bit confused on that chart. If what Representative Priestley was talking about there in Southwest Oregon, farmer owned and managed, if that's 82 acres, then what does the 1,000 acres right under owner class size mean? I interpreted that to mean that everything given here was in 1,000 acres.
Representative Van Leeuwen, that's correct. That's the numbers in there are thousands of acres, so that would be 82,000 acres. And it was in the classification of ownership of between 11 and 500 per owner.
Okay, which I think was the reverse of the way I understood your explanation to Wong.
Thank you. Continue.
Okay, on the last page, it's titled Area of Non-Industrial Private Commercial Forest Land by Size Class for Central Oregon, Blue Mountain Area, and all of Eastern Oregon. And again, here we're showing that the ownership by size class, by the type of non-industrial private owner. And again, we see that the individual owner tends to have the acreage in smaller ownership classes rather than farmer-owned and managed land. And I didn't see any significant difference between the two portions of Eastern Oregon, but it was available, so I showed it. Again, you'll notice the footnote about probability of error, and for certain cell sizes of, for example, the 33,000 in the excuse me, zero to ten class under all of Eastern Oregon individuals, the 33,000 acres is plus or minus 52%. So it could be as low as 15,000 or as high as 45,000. Still with a 68% probability of that range being correct. So the data is quite unreliable. I guess what I'm trying to say by all of this is that there is some information available. However, it's probably not sufficient to answer your questions with some certainty. One of the big problems we have is that the bill apparently, as I said before, applies only to EFU and other agricultural zoning, and we have no information that would separate out the forest land by zone description. Also talks about some income tests, which again we have no estimate of the economic productivity of farm units involved in the samples. And also it would appear that it would exclude those kinds of those parcels of land that already have houses on them. And that's again another piece of information that we don't have. The request from the committee also had one other question that I might want to devote a couple minutes to, if I may. The other question is on page 4 regarding the wording on lines 23 through 28 regarding gross income test, which will allow a dwelling in conjunction with farm use or the propagation or harvesting of forest product on a lot or parcel managed as a part of a farm unit or woodlot, smaller than the 20 acres. The question was, is that a reasonable number of dollars for an annual gross income figure? And is it reasonably easy to meet that test in a what might be termed a frivolous manner? Well, one way to determine this is how much would it take to produce $10,000 in annual gross income two consecutive years on forest land. In Western Oregon, land of average productivity on 2 acres will contain approximately $10,000 worth of gross value of timber. So that if an owner wished to, he could clear-cut harvest 2 acres in each of 2 years and meet that income test. Or he could conversely partial cut or commercially thin 15 acres in each of 2 years and meet the same test.
Dave, would it be a good idea then in that section, and I apologize for missing some of this discussion, that it would have to sustain approximately an annual income of $10,000 if you're going to have that kind of thing occur?
Madam Chair, I understood that to be the intent of lines 27 and 28. So that perhaps line 26 is redundant if that's the case. In other words, has the capability of producing on harvest an average of $10,000 in annual gross income. That's for forestry purposes.
Okay, we need to check, make sure you check that out.
Madam Chair, Breen?
Representative Priestley.
Is it true that you've given us a pamphlet here that has 4 pages, and the first page has to do with productivity, and the other three have to do with parcelization? Is that the general concept of what you've given us?
I guess that's what we've done. The first two pages, Representative Priestley, the first 2 pages have to do with productivity, and the second two with parcelization.
Okay. Now the first two then, is the general idea of this page that the type of species growing infers the productivity. Is that the general idea?
That's correct, Representative.
Now, over here under hardwoods, which I presume is oak and alder, are those hardwoods?
Yes.
It says one is 73% and one is 17%. Can you tell me what that means? First 10 is plus 85 and 50 to 85 and 20 to 50.
Representative Priestley, taking hardwoods as a group, if most of the hardwoods in western Oregon are growing in low elevations along flat stream bottoms and other places that are generally of high productivity, it's possible that some of the areas currently occupied by hardwoods could be growing conifers also. And a lot of the areas we find, particularly along stream bottoms, are very productive of timber and of other values. The 10% that shows at the low end is perhaps the 20 to 50 cubic feet per acre per year, perhaps indicative of some of the areas we note in the Cascades, particularly where the hardwoods growing at high elevation and on rocky areas are the only things that are able to grow in those areas and are not very productive at all.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to see, in other words, the general idea is that the species is indicative of productivity. So a person comes along and says, aha, here is a hardwood growing. Well, what does it mean to me? Well, I look on your chart and it says 73%, 17%, 10%. I don't understand that. Can you tell me why that works? I mean, because you have these oak knolls around here, oak knoll golf course. Mm-hmm. What is the oak knoll? What does it mean? Does it mean something?
Representative Priestley,
what is the inference?
In and of itself, the fact that a particular kind of tree is growing on a piece of land is not a definitive measure of how productive it is. You can gain some inference, however, and that's what I was trying to do, was to show that those areas of the state that generally are growing ponderosa pine, whether they be on the west side of the mountains or the east, are indicative of one range of productivity classes, whereas those that may grow other species are generally indicative of a different kind of growing condition. I don't believe it's necessarily wise to use that as a criteria.
Hmm. Well, it just does escape me. I come and I find oak trees growing, and what does it mean? Well, it means 73% of the time, 73% of the occurrences is that it's 85 over 85, and 17% says it's between 50 and 85. Is that it? I just wanted you to explain what it meant. And 10% of the time, it's 20 to 50. Is that it?
That's correct.
And then is there another cross-check then that has me subdivide to further narrow this down? Just to its productivity.
Well, Representative Priestley, not in and of itself. There's not a real simple, easy way of determining this. No.
Well, how would it work in the bill? Would you?
Well, the bill refers only to the cubic foot productivity class, which can be determined on the ground fairly easily.
Okay, I'll keep listening.
Okay. Are you through?
Yes. I can respond to any other questions the committee might have.
Representative Hill.
On the first page, let's take the west side of hardwoods. Okay, the way that I interpret this, 1,296 acres produce 85 cubic feet or more per year. Is that correct?
Representative Hill, that's 1,296,000. Yeah, that's correct. Is 85 cubic feet per acre per year or over.
Okay, and then 179,000 produce 20 to 50 cubic feet a year. Now, my question is, hardwoods, we're lumping alder in with oak and maple and everything in together. Would there be a situation where some land suited to oak is producing white oak, which grows slowly, and that would probably fall in the lower range, 20 to 50, although it may be excellent oak producing land, may fall in the low cubic foot per year range. Could that be the situation? Whereas most of the higher cubic foot producing hardwood land would be alder, faster growing.
Representative Hill, that's a correct generalization, yes. Generally, the higher site lands, as I said, are located along stream bottoms, and they'll be alder, maple, and other fast growing species. And the slow growing ones will be oak, chinkapin, and madrone.
So we could get ourselves in the situation of classifying, for instance, oak producing land just categorically marginal.
That's quite easy to do, yes.
Okay, that would not be desirable in my way of thinking. There would be more productive and lesser productive oak producing land, but it wouldn't necessarily all be marginal.
Representative Hill, there's a number of the areas on the fringes of the valley are oak and Douglas fir mixed, and in most of those areas the Douglas fir are close to the 85 cubic feet per acre per year productivity, and perhaps below it.
Representative Anderson.
Several things we're trying to get at, I think, in the bill is one, the counties have told us this is too cumbersome to manage, so I guess we're trying to get over that hurdle. So I guess some of us are looking for a soil classification where they could go out and send the county agent or somebody and look at the soil and say, you know, this soil is going to grow so many cubic feet, and so you can define it or something. We've had suggestions from the way the bill was written. I guess we're talking about 85 cubic feet. We've had suggestions to bring it back to 50, but then when we don't tell us a species, we don't know where we are. I can see at a glance from your chart on number one that 98% of Douglas fir is going to be opted out at the 50 level, and 83% at the 85 level, I guess. And so I guess the committee has to make a decision on how much Douglas fir land they want to opt out. But if we're going to take Western Oregon and go into some of these other areas, we got hemlock. We haven't accommodated anybody if it grows hemlock, because hemlock grows on everything. So I think we have to be more specific in the bill. I don't know whether you agree with that, but do we have to get down to species commonly grown in that area? Should we go so far as to identify regions? For example, I think Representative Traherne asked the question about southwestern Oregon. It's been common knowledge that the coastal area, the coastal range, are much more productive than the inland area, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess this has been the problem of land use planning, is trying to apply the same rule to the whole state. Is there any way that we can, or anything in place, or do we have to invent our own to regionalize this thing and say species commonly grown to this region, and then go into soil site classifications that are generally accepted and clean up the bill so that the counties can administer it? Now that's a big mouthful, but that's what I'm looking at.
Good point, Andy. I like that.
Representative Anderson, the Forestry Department has chosen not to take a position on this bill.
Energy will come back to order. Now, do you remember what you were? Except the person asking the question is not. Well,
that's a question.
Okay. I think one of the things that's just starting to dawn on people on this committee, or the full realization is what this bill does is deal with agricultural land and not really with forestry land when we're talking about marginal lands. Is that a correct assumption?
I'd like to put in just Hector McPherson again for the record. You know, we do have an awful lot of forestry land that's in the agricultural, and I think that's been minimized here, and there really is, but it is intermixed, and you've got to really consider the two together when you're considering this thing, that we're not talking about the commercial forest land, we're not talking about the forest zone, but there is a lot of forestry land, really, that's intermingled with farmers, and even out where I am, you look around and farmers will have a small woodlot, which is, of course, forestry within that highly productive farming area.
Hector or Dave, either one of you, on first page on line 19, when it talks about authorizes local governments to designate agricultural lands as marginal lands. Now, are the terms agricultural lands synonymous with EFU zones? Yes or no?
No.
No. So when you talk about agricultural lands, are you really then talking about, how do you define agricultural lands so that there's, can you be including in that forest lands when you're talking about agricultural lands?
Madam Chair, could we get Dick Benner? I think that he could answer this more clearly than I can.
And Mr.
I think
Benner, do you know the question? You can pull up another chair.
Madam Chair, I didn't hear the question. I was speaking with Ron Eber.
Agricultural land is an EFU.
Now, on page 19. I think it's the realization that this doesn't deal with forest land. It deals with
19.
Excuse me. Page 1, line 19. I apologize. I'm
confused enough.
It says, I mean, this bill really originated with Ag for Oregon. Is that correct?
Correct.
It does not deal with forest land except when they are in agricultural lands. Is that correct?
It deals with all lands that technically meet the LCDC definition of agricultural lands.
Could you tell me what that definition is of agricultural lands?
Okay, it is in Western Oregon, all lands that fall within capability classes 1 through 4 for agriculture. And in most of Western Oregon, that includes large amounts of forest land as well. Now, counties, generally speaking, have a choice about whether to designate that forest land that technically meets the definition of agricultural land, put it in a forest zone or an EFU zone.
Okay.
Some counties distinguish them fairly carefully, and if it's forested, even if it meets the definition of agricultural land, they'll put it in a forest zone. Other counties, Washington County is an example, Yamhill County is an example, will use one zone that covers both agricultural land that is being farmed and agricultural land that is forested and is being managed for forest practices. They'll use a single zone that qualifies as an EFU zone, but is also a forest zone, and they call it an AF, Agriculture Forestry Zone. All of that land would be covered by this bill.
So we're not talking strictly on page 2 then, when you start at the top of the page through, we are really not talking about just EFU zones.
That's right.
Now, if I may just continue on and then, my question is then on line 2, starting line 2 and 3, when you're talking about produce 20,000 or more, does that only relate to EFU land, or does that relate to forestry land, or does that relate to a combination of EFU forestry and AF land?
The latter. It would refer to all land that technically meets the definition of agricultural land, regardless of the kind of zone it falls into.
Okay, just let me, I will get to you in just 1 second. So when you're looking at these, what is all of these lands to be classified as marginal land, they have to meet, first of all of them have to meet the income test then? Is that correct?
That's right. That would be right.
And then they have to meet one or the other, either parcelization or productivity, which is really for forest land. Is that correct?
Correct.
Could you repeat that, Kevin? Because that was pretty pretty clear. I didn't understand it, I think.
So I'm saying every piece of land that's classified as agricultural land, whether it's in forest use or exclusive farm use, has to meet an income test. All of them have to meet the income test. Is that correct?
That's right.
And then they have to meet either the parcelization test or the soil classification or productivity.
That's right.
Maybe give me an example as to, you're trying to get over here to this box that's marked
marginal.
It's marginal. And you, how do you get there again?
The way I would do it, if I were a planner.